Sacramento.
Glory, glory, Sacramento. Glory, glory, Sacramento. The Republic marches on.
Roro with the goal.
Roro's going to take a shot. Oh, my, do you believe it?
Cameron Nwassa charging forward, looking for a team of strike on distance, and it rattles in! Cameron Nwassa, the Sacramento King!
That it was less about if and more about when Sacramento was going to join Major League Soccer. Well, folks, when is today? Your when has arrived.
Hello, Sacramento, and welcome back to the Rise of the Republic podcast. This is Richard Ivanowski coming to you now. Blake will be joining me later in the episode as we discuss some international clubs around the world. We've been on a bit of a quest to find myself a team to support internationally, most likely in the Premier League, but we're going to touch on the Bundesliga. We're going to touch on La Liga, Serie A, kind of just give a little bit of a wider range of options. I know a lot of soccer fans out there, especially people just getting into soccer for the first time, you're going to want to support a team in Europe. Obviously, we are both big Sacramento Republic fans, but to be honest, I think there's also something to be said for watching soccer at the highest levels as well. We want to see Sacramento do well. We're going to watch them move into the MLS now, unfortunately, in 2023 instead of 2022. We're going to be here for you the whole way. But we want to talk about, between games, we're going to discuss some other leagues and some other teams. So today, we've got three great interviews for you. Matt George is going to be joining me to discuss his journey to becoming a Norwich City fan. Then I've got a friend of mine from Twitter, Ace Ubus, discusses how he became an Everton fan, and he makes a pretty good pitch for me to join him on that journey. And finally, a friend of mine, Sanjesh Singh, and a writer, a fellow writer for the Sacramento Kings over at the Kings Herald organization there, kingsherald.com, a group that I've been a part of for a long time and can't speak more highly of. He's going to come on and discuss Arsenal with us. We talked about them briefly before, but he's going to give us a personal look at what it's like to be a fan of that club. I hope that you enjoyed the episode. And we'll be back to discuss the game against LA Galaxy 2 sometime early next week. Early this week, I should say. All right, thank you so much. And welcome back. We've got Mr. Matt George from KHDK on today, a Sac Republic fan, and get this, a Norwich City fan. How did that happen, Matt?
It's a very weird story, and there are often times where I regret my choice of club, but I'm so ingrained in the culture of, as you know, rooting for not juggernaut programs and teams. Like, just looking at the States, of course, growing up a fan of the Sacramento Kings, we had our heyday, but it's been a while. Growing up a fan of the Oakland Raiders, now the Las Vegas Raiders, we know how long it's taken for them to win. And then diehard fan of the Oakland A's, who haven't won since before I was born. That is a World Series. So I'm used to rooting for underdog teams. So that played a part in it. But for many years at Sports 1140 KHDK, I worked as the producer and a board operator for a hunting and fishing show Saturday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m., or rather 5 to 8 a.m. And so I would get in super early, and that's prime time for the European Premier League to be on NBC. And for some reason, through the first six or so weeks that I was working and actually paying attention to EPL, Norwich was on all the time. Now, they were taking on the Man Uniteds, the Man Cities, the Chelseas, and the juggernaut teams, and most of the time they were losing. But I don't know if it was the green and gold, the atmosphere at Carrow Road. I really enjoyed watching a couple of players play, like Cameron Jerome and Stephen Naismith, who were on the club at the time. And I just I picked them and I've stuck with them. They had a couple of good years in the English Championship, which is the league under the EPL. Came up to the EPL this year and have gotten absolutely demolished as they are heading back down most likely and back in relegation. But I'm proud to be a Norwich City fan, and I haven't met another one in the States yet.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's bold. I respect it a lot. In this series, I've been talking with my co-host Blake about, you know, I'm trying to figure out what team I want to choose. I know a lot of people are trying to choose teams right now as well.
Yeah.
With the downtime in American pro sports, the EPL came back a little bit before any American pro sports did. It's a good time to watch soccer. And I'm definitely drawn towards the bottom of the table. It might be that Kings thing. We got that connection going on. You mentioned the green and gold. Was that an A's thing? Like, I mean, was there any, you know, is the aesthetic of a team important to you?
I think so. I mean, color scheme is really important, especially in soccer, right? One of my favorite things about soccer, or football, as they call it over there, are I think soccer kits are the most clean and unique things in all of professional sports uniforms, right? Like, everybody talks about the pinstripes with the New York Yankees or the bright yellow and purple of the Los Angeles Lakers. I think it pales in comparison to the multicolored Barcelona kit or the clean, prestigious white of Real Madrid or the blood red of Manchester United. So I look at kits and I enjoy looking at these kits. BVB, Borussia Dortmund in Germany has that bright yellow kit that everybody loves. Kits are extremely important in soccer, and I got attached to those right away. And Norwich City has just these very clean, now they change every season, but has just this very clean, mostly yellow with kind of their lime green across the sides and down on the shorts. And I don't know, the aesthetic of it for sure, the green and gold, already being used to that as an A's fan, it certainly drew my attention. And then kind of the homey atmosphere of the club was something that I enjoyed as well, rather than watching a team like United or City play in these massive stadiums. Where there are, you can clearly tell who the juggernaut teams are. When you first start watching EPL, you'll be able to tell right away, okay, that's a juggernaut team, and that's kind of an underdog team. And like you, Richard, I just naturally, I gravitate towards those underdogs.
Yeah, on Twitter, you had a really good analogy between Manchester and Los Angeles. Would you mind breaking that down a little bit and maybe explain why you wouldn't recommend going for a top six team?
Well, you can choose whatever club that you want to support, and more power to you if you decide you want to support a team from Manchester, because you're going to enjoy a lot of success and a lot of big names and the drama that comes with that, Champions League and things like that, which I never get to experience as a Norwich fan. But Manchester City and Manchester United are basically, if you're drawing similarities to the NBA, they're basically the Lakers and Clippers, United being the Lakers. United has been that established brand in the EPL, as far as I understand, for a long time. They're called the Red Devils for a reason. You know that they are that team to play. Man United, I guess from a baseball standpoint, you could also call like the Yankees. They're just that club. Even though they haven't won in a while, they're just that club that is up there, is so prestigious that you expect them to be at the top and expect them to spend the money for the best names and to always be in the conversation at the top of the table. I personally recommend, if you're going into the EPL and trying to pick a club, first off, don't just pick the first club you see or based off of badge or kit. Watch a few matches and see who you naturally find yourself rooting for. Like I said, when I was watching Norwich City play, they were always getting beaten up by the bigger clubs, or they would fall down 1-0 early. And I'm like, okay, give me that equalizer. Give me that moment. And sometimes it would come, sometimes it wasn't. I just naturally noticed that I was rooting for Norwich. But the bottom to middle of the table is probably, I think, the prime to pick. If you're looking for good clubs right now to potentially latch onto, the Wolverhampton Wanderers, aka the Wolves, are a great club to follow. They are actually the favorite club of Sacramento Republic FC head coach Mark Briggs. So he'll happily welcome you to the fan base and talk to you a lot about them online. They are a story. They were not in this league last year. And right now they're currently in sixth place, which is a tremendous achievement for them. There are big clubs that are currently in the middle of the table, like Tottenham Hotspur and Arsenal. These are well-established brands that you could pick as well, who have struggled to get towards the top. And then you could pick those fun Cinderella story teams like Leicester City, who a couple of years ago, they were bottom of the table and they won the EPL. And this year they're third in the EPL. When you look at their team and you look at the roster they've put together compared to a Man City or a Liverpool, you're like, they have no business being that high. So I just always recommend watch as much soccer as possible and just pick a team that you naturally kind of gravitate towards. And if that's a juggernaut club, if you fall in love with the way Liverpool plays, pick them. There's nothing wrong with that. You can't really be a fair weather fan if you're just introducing yourself to the sport.
Awesome. Yeah. I watched West Ham beat Chelsea yesterday. And that's the first time that I've been excited by a Premier League team. Yeah. I wanted to watch that game. So I wanted to watch both sides. There's the Pulisic thing with Chelsea. Like, a lot of people are pitching me on Chelsea, you know, the best American player is on that side, but I just can't root for the better team. Like, the team that is favored, it's just, I'm always going to be rooting for the underdog. So last question for you here, considering that Norwich is last on the table, going down, that's kind of the life of a Norwich fan, coming up, going down. If anyone out there is considering Norwich as their team, what's your like quick pitch on them? Should they join you?
Yes, absolutely. Please. We need more here in the States. I guess the best thing that I would recommend if you're on the fence about watching Norwich and you want to get an idea of their atmosphere and what they can do. Earlier this season, Norwich defeated Manchester City at Carrow Road, which is where Norwich plays. They defeated them 3-2. And it was an incredible match. And to put that into perspective, right, that's like a team with, to make a baseball analogy, we talk a lot about the A's tiny little payroll, right? And how they were taking on the Yankees in the wild card game a couple of days ago, and the Yankees have that massive payroll. This situation of Norwich beating Man City was like a triple A ball club, the Sacramento River Cats beating the New York Yankees in a game. Now, ultimately, it didn't matter because Manchester City is second in the table and the Norwich is at the bottom and they're going to get relegated. But in that moment, it was incredible scenes, really fun. You could see the team is very young. They have a lot of young prospects, so you could see the potential of what they could be. Go onto YouTube and just look up or Google Norwich City versus Manchester City. And watch, there's like a 7-minute highlight of that match and you can just feel the energy in that stadium. And that is a great way, I think, to get attached to Norwich City. And hey, they won the championship last year before they came up. And the English championship is basically the AAA to EPL, which is ML or Major League Baseball. So they are still a talented club. EPL was just too much for them this year, and I'm hopefully they'll be able to turn it around and their players will be old enough and ready for the challenge next time they're in.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining us today.
Well, always good to talk soccer, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, welcome back. We are working our way down the table of the Premier League. And we're on a team right now that I think, Blake, you've probably called them I don't know the terminology very well. I'm still the guy getting to know all these teams, but this is the seventh team in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, there's a common joke on Football Weekly, which I'm sure a lot of soccer fans listen to. And they're the common joke about the seventh place slot is they're calling it the Everton Cup, because it kind of seems to be where they're stuck. But they're always really a pretty good team, top half of the table. But yeah, Everton's a fun team, the second team in Liverpool. And we're happy to have our guest on, who's a pretty big Everton supporter.
Yeah, introducing him right now, it's Ace Ubis, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your last name, but is it Ubis or Ubis?
Ubis. I go by Ubis.
Gotcha. Ace Ubis is here joining us. I only know him from Twitter. I believe we're both Kings fans, and I've definitely seen Ace tweeting about Everton quite a bit, and he tweeted at me today because Everton were playing, and I watched this game. But yeah, I'm excited. I mean, what did you think about the result today?
It was definitely a good result, considering that Leicester has been a really good side this season, and for Everton to take 3 points is a huge deal in their fight for a European place this season.
Yeah, they looked really good. So getting more into the concept of these episodes, I want to know how you became an Everton fan.
So I've been an Everton fan for close to 10 years now. And, you know, being here in America, like soccer or football isn't like the biggest sport. It's, you know, usually behind like, you know, baseball, you know, American football and basketball. But I really like what solidified my fandom for Everton was basically the American goalkeeper during the 2014 World Cup, Tim Howard, who had an incredible World Cup, even though the U.S. Got knocked out. But I wanted to follow a club team in England. And yeah, Tim Howard was the Everton goalkeeper during that time. And yeah, that's basically where it began, and I've just been following them ever since.
Yeah, I remember, I think there was a game against Belgium where they still lost, but I think he had like an insane number of saves. And yeah,
he actually holds the record for that. It's like 16 saves in that entire match. Incredible.
Do you remember that game, Blake?
Yeah, I do. And it's funny because I've told this story a few times on the podcast, Ace. I'm not sure if you've heard me say it, but I'm a Liverpool fan. And really what drew me to Liverpool originally was just the Beatles being from that town, because I'm a big Beatles fan as well. And I had mentioned in our last recording when we did the top six in the Premier League that I probably would have ended up being an Everton fan if I knew they were from Liverpool, with the fact that I'm more of an underdog supporter. When I'm trying to choose teams, I kind of root for the underdog. And then with Tim Howard being there, I kind of spaced on it. And that's right. Like, Tim Howard was a really good goalkeeper for them at the time. And that game was the World Cup when I first started watching soccer, and he did something amazing. I can't believe he kept it 0-0 for so long.
Yeah, totally. And Everton actually has had like an American connection in the past. Like, they've had Landon Donovan in on loan for a couple seasons, and he's probably like their biggest like profile American name aside from Tim Howard.
So how's it been watching them since then, like in the Premier League, in Europe, in Cups? Like, what's the experience been like? What have been some of the highs and lows, I guess?
A lot of ups and downs, mainly downs, especially with these last few seasons. It's been a roller coaster of a ride, I would say. Like, within the last decade, like, Everton has always been like in the top half of the table, as Blake described earlier. You know, you have that Everton Cup spot being seventh or eighth, but Everton has like never like broken through to the top six. You know, you have your top six clubs established, but Everton have never been able to like break it through within, you know, in this last decade or so. And, you know, they've made like good cup runs domestically, like in the FA Cup and the Football League Cup, I believe. I don't know what they're calling it now, or the Carabao Cup is what it's called now. But yeah, they haven't been able to like win a trophy since like 1995, and that was the FA Cup. That was the last trophy that they won. So it's been up and down, I would say. But, you know, looking towards the future, yeah, if you want to become an Everton fan, like, now's the time to do it for sure.
Interesting. So do you think they have like a legitimate chance to win something soon?
I think they do, especially with the legendary manager, Carlo Ancelotti, now at the helm, who they brought in December. And, you know, the results have shown, you know, since his hiring. They've only lost three times, I believe. And they've gotten, like, within these last 14 matches, they've gotten, like, 23 points. So they're definitely, like, on the right path. They also have, you know, a good core of young players that are coming through this season. So, yeah, as long as, you know, they can continue, you know, the momentum going into the future, I think a European place is definitely within the grasp.
What about some of your favorite players? I know you got in with Tim Howard, but since then, one guy that I know, I don't know a ton of players on their team, but Leighton Baines, I think, is a dude that's been there like forever.
And I would say like Seamus Coleman, who just have been the leaders of the team, and they have been there for, you know, quite a while, even before I became a fan of them. Other players, like my personal favorite player since Tim Howard, has been like Gareth Barry. Like, he's that midfielder who like does it all, isn't afraid to, you know, just do all the dirty work. Idrissa Gana Gueye is another one of those like midfielders. He moved on to PSG last season, but he was just a guy who basically just like made all the tackles. You know, he protected the Everton like defense, being that destroyer in midfield. And those are the type of players that I tend to like. They may not be the biggest names, but they do like everything. They poured their heart and soul like every match. And I would say Romelu Lukaku too.
Yeah.
He's moved on. He's with Inter now. But the guy was just like scoring goals when he played for Everton. And they really haven't had a striker like him since then. They've struggled to replace him, but currently they have Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, and a front two. And they look like a really, really good strike partnership up top. So,
yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Romelu Lukaku. The last year he was with Everton, I think they had their opener or their home opener against Spurs. And they were the only team to not play. I had a fantasy game going on with one of my buddies, and the only player from Everton that was left to play, or the only player on my buddy's team that was left to play, was Romelu Lukaku, and he scored a hat trick that day and completely took the win away from me. So I was kind of bummed about that. But I did want to ask you, you mentioned Carlo Ancelotti. What were some of your feelings when you heard he was coming in? Obviously, he's a very high-profile manager, but also, what's his playing style like with Everton? Has there been a drastic identity change in the way they play?
One of the biggest things, I mean, he's a legendary manager. He's, like, won Champions League. He's won, you know, league titles, you know, in every country that he's been to, I believe. Like, he's won the league title with PSG, Bayern Munich, AC Milan, Chelsea. So this guy has an impressive pedigree, and, you know, he has a reputation he's got the Champions League reputation. And for him to be linked with Everton, like, I don't think a lot of us believe that, you know. It was probably just one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, it's just rumors. There's just a lot of smoke. It's not gonna happen. And then it actually happened, and you really can't believe it as an Everton fan. You know, someone of that pedigree, that winning history, to like be the manager team. It was quite unbelievable. Actually, I really don't think the Everton fan base like believed it. In terms of play style, you know, the previous manager, Marco Silva, played in a 4-2-3-1. And then when Duncan Ferguson came in as caretaker, he implemented a four, you know, just the basic 4-4-2. Ancelotti came in, stuck with that 4-4-2. But previously, Ancelotti's been pretty flexible. But with his stint in Napoli before Everton, he was also using a 4-4-2. So, yeah, in terms of his style, he tends to have, like, his wing. He likes to have his wingers, like, tuck in and drift in the middle. Like, if you watch the Leicester City game today, Anthony Gordon, this was just his second game starting, he basically doing what Ancelotti wants in a winger. Having like freedom to drift in, having his fullbacks overlap, in terms of pressing, you know, he likes to have his strikers press the center backs when possible. Yeah, the thing that's like lacking at the moment is definitely like a midfield. Pretty slow and uncreative midfield, and that's probably like the biggest weakness right now for Everton. And you know, there have been rumors that Everton have been linked with Allen from Napoli, who Ancelotti has worked with, you know, just more of like a box-to-box with a bit of pace and a little bit of creativity. I think those are the qualities he's looking for in a midfield, which is what's currently lacking with Everton right now.
Yeah, I saw in the game today, it's the first game, Everton game that I watched in years, in the first game that I really was paying close attention to. Yeah, like some of that play, the stuff on the wings was really impressive. That I think it was the second goal, the one that they really worked outside in, and there was the finish was nice, but it was the work on the sidelines that really impressed me there. And I always enjoy good left backs, right backs, especially once it can range up and attack. So this seems pretty attractive to me. I'll also say that to tie in the Romelu Lukaku thing, it's interesting that you guys brought him up because he was actually the guy that scored the winning goal against Tim Howard in that game where he set that save record, I believe, in the round of 16.
I remember he did.
Is he?
Yeah, so that's wild. That was, Belgium guy.
See, it's funny because I was so brand new to soccer at the time. I didn't know names like that. So every once in a while, someone will bring up a name, and I'm like, "Oh, that's him. That's crazy." I'm glad I learned that today.
Yeah. So let's last question here is if you just want to give us just your pitch to anyone. Obviously, I'm looking for a team right now. Everton are in – I've narrowed it down to six. I've got six teams that I'm considering backing. But in a more general sense, to anyone out there that's listening looking for a team, give your pitch on why you should be an Everton supporter.
So my big thing is with Everton, it's a community. Being an Everton fan here in Southern California, I've been able to find an incredible community here with SoCal Everton. And – they've been phenomenal. Just it's one big family. And in terms of Everton's community work back in England, it's like top notch. I think that's what I want to like push is that Everton is just, they're an incredible club that does things beyond the pitch. I don't know what other clubs have done in terms of, you know, like charity work, but that would be like the biggest thing. If you like the social media camaraderie and banter, Everton, the Everton fan base is one of the best out there. Trying to make a connection here to the Sacramento Kings, like online fan base, you know, there's that term Kangs, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We have Everton that, you know, when you think Everton is just about to like turn the corner or, you know, they have like a 2-goal lead with like 2 minutes left to play, they always find a way to just like blow it, you know, but Everton that, you know, and Carlo Ancelotti, like a big name manager. I saw the list that, you know, that you were considering on Twitter, but none of them have Carlo Ancelotti. So let me just put that out there.
Yeah, any final thoughts there, Blake? You know, I know you want me to choose a team that's not – you don't want me to go dive into the bottom of the table. Is this a team that you think I should choose?
I would be happy if you chose them, just because I can at least poke you a little bit, because you seem to be on the bottom half of the city of Liverpool at the moment. But it would be fun to watch the uprise if it happens. And I think of some of the teams you've chosen, they have a more stable fit into the Premier League as far as relegation comes. They look the least likely to be relegated at the moment, especially with Carlo coming in. No, I wouldn't have an issue at all if you chose Everton. It's a fun rivalry, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the Merseyside derby also called the Friendly Derby?
I believe so, but I don't remember the last time it was actually called that.
Do you know the reason why? I've never had a history lesson on that one.
I would have to dig further into that.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't have that on hand, like just in my head right now.
No, that's totally fine. I'll have to do some research too, and maybe we'll tweet at each other once one of us figure it out.
Totally. I mean, I would also say that, like, if Richard did choose Everton, you know, you would have the Rise Republic derby, basically, just like, you know, the banter between both of you.
Ooh,
that's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah, it is tempting. I'm definitely keeping them in mind. We'll talk more about it as the episodes continue to roll along. But for now, thank you, Ace. Everyone out there, if you got a Twitter account, follow Ace at @ace_ubas. That's @ace_ubas. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
All right. Joining us now, we got a buddy of mine and a fellow writer over at the King's Herald. We are mutual Kings fans, known each other for a little while now. It's Sanjesh Singh. But he's also a big soccer fan, obviously, and he's here to talk to us about the team we just mentioned on the back end of this podcast. Sanjesh is a big Arsenal fan, so we want to get to know what that process was like for you. How did you originally choose Arsenal?
So I started playing like soccer. Like, this kind of leads into my story about how I became an Arsenal fan, but I started playing competitive soccer when I was 4. And I kind of wanted to just, like, keep, like, when I was not playing games or practicing, I just wanted to stay with soccer content somehow, just because it was just so fun. And that's when, like, you know, I started watching them. I started watching soccer on TV more. And one day, I don't remember when this was, but it was a long time ago. My dad was watching a game between Liverpool and Arsenal. And my dad's a Liverpool fan. And so all I remember is that Liverpool were granted a penalty. And my dad was just cheering nonstop. And so for some reason, I just wanted Liverpool to miss. Like, I was just hating that, like, I was just mad that he wanted Liverpool to score. I don't know why. And so the kicker, I don't know what the kicker was, but I know the goalie was Lemon, I'm pretty sure. And he, you know, he went up to take it, and he put it wide to the left. And then, like, I was just happy about that. And then, like, that drove my desire to see Arsenal win the game. I don't remember the result at all, but from then on, I just started becoming, like, you know, an avid Arsenal watcher. And from then on, I still have my first ever Henry jersey, Thierry Henry jersey. He became the first soccer player I loved. I have his jersey with me, like the old school jersey. It's in my drawer somewhere. I became in love with him. He's just like God level striker, so underrated in terms of the soccer world and underappreciated. And then, you know, from then on, I just started like craving more Arsenal content. I became a fan of Emmanuel Adebayor, even though he kind of fell off hard with the Arsenal fan base. Patrick Vieira, William Gallus, like all these guys just became like an easy team to root for, like guys that played for each other, guys that wanted to win. Their head coach, Arsene Wenger, you know, was one of the best coaches in the world as well. And then, you know, of course, Arsenal also are the only team in the Premier League history that went undefeated over the course of an entire season. That's why they're known as the Invincibles after their 2003-2004 season. It's just I know they had a lot of draws, and that's what, you know, a lot of people really point to, like, oh, they drew a lot. But to not lose a game out of, like, 38 games played is an incredible feat that, you know, only one team has accomplished to this point. And I know I was only, like, 3 or 4 years old when that happened, so I wasn't even, like, aware that it happened until I grew older. But that's very good history, you know, to have behind your back when you're supporting a club. And, you know, in recent memory, Arsenal have not, you know, seen the same success that they saw, you know, in the early days when I first became a fan. They haven't won the league in over, like, 15, 16 years. They've just been shuffling head coaches ever since Wenger left. They went through Unai Emery, who I was very skeptical about, and it turned out to be right. He was driving the club to the ground pretty much. And then they go to Freddie Ljungberg, the Arsenal legend. But that was just an interim thing. And now they bring in Mikel Arteta. And Arsenal, the thing about Arsenal is that they make a lot of revenue. I don't know exactly like what year this was in, but I remember looking at the teams that make the most revenue in the world. This is probably 2017, 2018, one of those years. But Arsenal was like top five in terms of global clubs and revenue they brought in. You know, up there was Man United, Real Madrid, and Barca, of course. But Arsenal was number five, I think, or number four, one of those two. And I was just surprised that, like, if a team is making this much bank every year, why aren't they, like, you know, necessarily showing it on the pitch? But and that's what kind of, like, you know, led me to believe that Arsenal could be, like, you know, going on the way down because the board wasn't putting in that much effort into giving the coaches the money they wanted and the money they wanted, you know, to use to buy players. I know, like, I remember the ESPN reported once that Lionel Messi said he would come to play in the Premier League and he'd only play for Arsenal if they would give him a weekly wage of €1 million a week. That was his only condition. He would come to Arsenal. But, you know, Arsenal didn't want to pay that, of course. And when Wenger was, you know, heading towards like the downwards of his career, he was trying to sign all these young prospects that are shining on other teams right now. Like Kylian Mbappe was the one he was very close to getting, but he chose PSG. And that was a very hefty transfer. Like Arsenal can afford these things, they just don't really show it. But Arsenal, you know, they're known to be the Gunners and they have a cannonball as their logo. And that's just like a dope thing to root for. Like just saying you're a fan of the team known as the Gunners, that's just like, that's very cool to me. And the red and white kits are like so beautiful. Their old kits are very nice as well. Like the yellow and blue looks they've had, retro looks throughout the years, the IBC jerseys, I mean, JBC jerseys. What do you call it? The aesthetics nowadays are still very beautiful with the jerseys they put out. I believe I saw their leaked away jersey for the next year. It's going to be very awesome. And currently, like, they're a team that prioritizes youth because since they haven't been necessarily splashing the cash on already developed players, like, you know, you see Chelsea doing right now, Man United and Man City have been doing for a while now. They're kind of going the organic way and trying to develop the youth from their academy. They've seen a lot of youth prospects come up over recent times. One of the players is Alex Iwobi, who came up, and they just recently sold him for €40 million to Everton. Players currently on the roster, like Bukayo Saka, who has just recently signed a new contract, and he's a guy that has played left wing, left back, and center mid, and he's just 18 years old. And he succeeded in all three positions he's played in. That's a big task for somebody that just got promoted to the senior team, but he's done a fantastic job of doing that. They recently brought on Gabriel Martinelli, who is going to be, you know, a great up-and-coming Brazilian striker. Plays with a lot of passion, plays with a lot of heart. He sat down in N'Golo Kante for a game against Chelsea. That was really cool to watch. They also have Emil Smith-Rowe coming up. He's on loan at Huddersfield at the moment. William Saliba is another center back that's going to be great for them. Eddie Nketiah is another striker they're counting on to be great. Joe Willock is another center attacking mid that they've, you know, been doing good with. They also have the best striker, I believe, in the Premier League, in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He currently has netted 19 goals, tied with Jamie Vardy for number one. But he's doing that with, like, a very young supporting cast rather than one that's very talent-heavy with a lot of money behind them, with a lot of expectations. That's very cool to see. I mean, like, Arsenal, this is their worst season in, like, the longest time because they're currently sitting with 46 points, seventh or eighth in the Premier League, I'm forgetting right now, but 40 points behind Liverpool, who've already clinched the title, and this is not looking good for Arsenal, but they're probably, out of the top six teams, they probably have, besides Chelsea, the brightest future coming up because of all the youth they have And now because they're being linked to like these names like Thomas Partey from Atletico Madrid, Dayo Upamecano from Leipzig, I think it's looking good for Arsenal. They are signing, or they're like, you know, retaining all these younger players that they've previously been known to give out to their rivals. I just think it's a Arsenal, being an Arsenal fan is like a very, like, you know, a seesaw-ish ride of emotions. Like, you either don't, like a roller coaster pretty much. You don't know what you're going to get. They're either going to blow out Norwich 4-0 or they're going to lose to Brighton and Hove Albion 2-1. You just never know what you're going to get with them. But the way the signs are pointing right now, I think it's very good to be an Arsenal fan.
One thing I really wanted to ask you about is because for many, many younger Arsenal fans, Arsene Wenger pretty much was the coach the entire time. And he took them to glory in that season where they were given the name of the Unbeatables. One, it was 12 draws, correct?
I believe so, 12, yeah.
Which,
something like that.
Which is, I understand how some people can dilute the achievement that way, but I'm not one to do that. That's an amazing achievement. One thing I wanted to ask you is, as the standards slowly dropped with Arsene Wenger, you saw a little more of this push of the Wenger out campaigns gain wind. And where were you on that at all? And at what point, if so, did you kind of get into that? Let's see this guy go.
The main reason, like, I was kind of on the fence about the whole, like, Wenger out thing the entire time it was happening. Like, sometimes I'd be like, okay, we kind of do need a new direction with Arsenal. Or sometimes, okay, like, if he does go, who are we going to replace him with? And that was that replacing him was obviously the scary part. Like, who are we going to replace him with? Do we trust the board to make the right decision? They're already not giving Wenger enough, funds to buy the players he wants. So how are they going to go in terms of, you know, getting a new coach? Obviously, they failed on their initial search with Emery, because Emery just, like, he bought some good players. But, like, I'll thank Emery for giving us Gabriel Martinelli, as well as buying Matteo Guendouzi, even though he seems to be on his way out with Arteta. But with the whole Wenger out thing, it's the way I see it is because Wenger had a very mediocre squad, I guess I would say, with Arsenal. Like, Theo Walcott was not the player he developed to be. He had so much potential as a very pacey winger, and he ended up not really, you know, living up to that hype. They did get Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez together, but they didn't really surround them with more that they could have. Like, if they had kept Sanchez maybe longer with when they signed Lacazette, that could have been something special. But when Ozil and Sanchez were in their primes, their attacking options, which was their strength because their defense has been very mediocre for a very long time now, they surrounded them, you know, with Walcott, Giroud, Iwobi, guys not necessarily with a great knack for the goal. I'm thankful for Giroud because he gave us some very great goals, but obviously, you know, you can be, as they've shown with signing Lacazette and Aubameyang, you can do much better than Giroud. And the midfield was okay, but if the way Arsenal played against lower level opposition, like teams like Southampton, they blew them out with Wenger. But when Emery was in charge, and when, you know, Youngberg came in for a few games, they struggled to beat these teams with arguably better players. Like, they had Abba, they had Lacazette, they bring in guys like Xhaka and Torreira, but they're still struggling to beat these lower teams that Wenger had no problem beating whatsoever, no matter the mediocre, like, you know, squad he had. And the whole thing with Arteta now is that he's asking for the board to be, you know, a little aggressive and more demanding from the board when in terms of getting these players, because Arsenal can be on the rise that Liverpool has seen, especially when they signed Virgil van Dijk. When they got him, the whole team transformed. When Man United, when they were going on a downward spiral, they signed Bruno Fernandes. Now look at them. They've won, like, every game they played since the restart. Chelsea, now, you know, they've got their two signings recently. So with Arsenal, the links, they're recently linked to guys like Thomas Partey and Dayo Upamecano, positions of crucial need at Arsenal because they lack that box-to-box defensive midfielder that can go get the ball from anybody. Same at the center-back line. Like, their center-backs are always injured, or they're David Luiz. You either have, like, you know, there's no star center-back coming up out of Arsenal right now besides William Saliba. Mustafi has Mustafi was bought for 35 million euros. He fell off hard. Luiz is very, very inconsistent. Sometimes you'll love him, with the balls he plays, sometimes you hate him because he'll do things like against Man City where he'll concede penalties and red cards. Socrates is aging. You need to get rid of him. You know, Ozil has been on the decline now, and he makes 350,000 euros a week just to sit on the bench and even not make the squad at some time. So with Wenger out, like, it was a hard choice, but ultimately I do believe it was the right decision to move on.
So if I was going to choose a top six team, I'll be honest with you, it would be the Tottenham Spurs. Tell me about the rivalry between Spurs and Arsenal.
Well, the thing with, because, like, you know, they're both the two, you know, Northern London teams that are relevant in the Premier League pretty much. And the whole thing with Tottenham is that, like, they've been in the Premier League for so long, yet they have nothing to show for it. They've, like, you know, established themselves as a team that can finish in the top six, yet they don't do anything with that. They haven't won the Premier League. They haven't done anything in the Europa League. They don't have any FA Cup trophies. They made the Champions League final this past year, though I believe they did get lucky because other teams beat the stronger competitions. And when they had the chance, you know, to win the final against Liverpool, they missed out on that under their best coach in Pochettino, Mauricio Pochettino. And after that, they decide to sack him. And then they bring in Jose Mourinho, who has not been good at all as of late. He doesn't have the same spark he did with teams he did in the past. And now Mourinho and the Spurs have seen a decline as well. And this is Arsenal's worst season in like 20 to 30 years, yet it's still better than the Tottenham Hotspurs. And the thing with the Spurs is that they cashed out, or they didn't cash out, but they splashed a lot of cash on a center mid named Dombele this summer. And they spent like over like 60 million, 70 million euros on him. And already, just last week, he said that he doesn't want to play for the Tottenham Hotspurs anymore because Mourinho is their head coach. And if that is going on with your team, your big signing doesn't want to play for you anymore because of the coach you hired, there is, you know, serious issues going on. They have nothing in their trophy cabinet. They can't win FA Cups. Like, even under, you know, Wenger's, one of Wenger's worst seasons in 2014, Arsenal still came out, you know, with the FA Cup win. Like, if you want to, like, they're pretty much just padded with empty wins at this point. Like, they have wins. They've been in the Premier League for a long time. Yet, when you look at the trophy cabinet, it's still empty. This is probably also the best squad they're going to have in a long time. Like, they're not really known for developing guys out of the youth academy. Harry Winks is a young guy they have, but there's not much to be, you know, seen about what he has in his future. Like, he probably may have already hit his peak as a guy. Dele Alli hasn't been very great. Harry Kane has been inconsistent recently. He is coming off injury, but, you know, he hasn't been that great. And if Tottenham can't win trophies with the best squad they've had right now than they have, like, you know, in, you know, recent memory, then it's not looking very well for them, especially as teams like the Wolves, Everton, and Leicester City are making a run for these top six teams.
From the outside in, looking at this, the last 5 or 6 years in the Premier League, the Arsenal fan base, and it may just be due to frustrations from the last, you know, decade or so, but they seem to be the most, I'm going to say, irritable and irritated fan base amongst these top six teams. And it seemed like it was all projected at Arsene Wenger for a very long time. And now there was the controversy earlier in the season about Arsblog, the TV, Arsenal TV guy.
Oh, Arsenal Fan TV?
Yes, where they boot him out of the stand. And I've heard you kind of in some of our off-mic conversations talk a little bit about how you're not super vibing with the board on the way they manage their money. Two questions, I guess. One is, do you think Arsenal fans are especially irritated compared to all the other teams? Are they a more angry fan base? And then also, where do you place your blame on the current situation?
So I'd say that I do agree, and I kind of feel that same frustration as well, mainly because I think there's a lot of history tied behind Arsenal, and Arsenal have not played to their, you know, historical components. they can be so much better than they are right now. They make a ton of money. They've had very good players come into their ranks, through their ranks, and, you know, players they've signed that have already established. But they can be so much better than where they were towards Wenger's downside years. Where they are right now, they can be so much better, but they just haven't shown that consistency that we've seen, you know, in the past. They have very, very talented players. You know, they have Aubameyang, they have Lacazette, but they can be so much better than they are than right now. And I think part of that also goes to the board's unwillingness to spend. I think that statement or that hypothesis kind of changed a little bit this past summer when they bought, you know, Nicolas Pepe in installments for over 80 million euros. Last season, Pepe had stats similar to Messi's. I know he's playing in France, so it's kind of inflated because France is not as competitive as these other bigger leagues. But that's still, you know, to put up over 20 goals and over 10 assists in, for any team is a ridiculous feat to accomplish. Pepe did that. They signed him. And they brought in Kieran Tierney, who seems to be one of the up-and-coming Scottish left-backs. And he was just spotted with the Tesco bag, even though he just, you know, made a lot of money. What do you call it? They bought Saliba. They got Martinelli coming in. So we know the board has money. They're just not investing it back into the team as much as they should be doing. And recent, in just these past few days where Arsenal has won 3 straight games, they've already tied down Bukayo Saka, the youngster who I've talked about that is going to be special for this team. They've tied him down to a 4-year contract, so we don't have to worry about him going anywhere anytime soon. Just today, they signed Gabriel Martinelli to a better contract to secure him because they know he's going to be the future striker once Aubameyang leaves, whether he stays or not. And now they're linked to Thomas Partey, as I mentioned, and Dayot Upamecano. And there is some young, like, Arsenal may not even make any European competition this league or this season because they're 8th place right now. They're 6 points away from 5th, where Man U and the Wolves are currently tied for. They have to beat the Wolves tomorrow in order to, you know, kind of prove themselves a little bit that, okay, they can make probably make a run for this. But I'm not necessarily counting on them to make it. And that may be better, for them because they may be better off just focusing on the league and, you know, building for next season under our under a full season of Arteta, under a full season of Arteta's training and, you know, Arteta finding out who his best players are, who plays well with each other and things like that, who has the best chemistry. So the frustration is probably going to remain until we see more results. I think with Arteta coming in, fans are understanding that he's a younger manager. He was under Pep Guardiola at Man City, so he's still learning. And he's still, you know, trying to develop a relationship with the board where he says, hey, to the board, I need these players. Can you get them for me? They're going to, you know, establish our squad, make us better. And if they can make these signings come true, like Thomas Partey, like Dayot Upamecano, guys like Szoboszlai coming in from Germany, or maybe Jonathan David from Russia who wants to come to Arsenal as well, that's going to speak volumes to where Arsenal is headed. Because, like I've mentioned, Liverpool and Man United, all it took is one signing. Van Dijk, Fernandes, now they're, you know, on the rise. Liverpool had a, like, you know, a tremendous year this season without having to play, you know, Lovren every, you know, single game. And if Arsenal can make these, like, replicate these signings, replicate these players teams are bringing in, then it's going to dramatically change the trajectory of the team for the good. So, yeah.
All right, last question here. Let's do it. One sentence pitch for anyone out there listening, trying to choose their team. One sentence on why they should be an Arsenal supporter.
That is very hard. I just say, like, if you watch an Arsenal game and you are attracted to their youth development compared to the other teams that are not prioritizing youth, rather splashing cash on the hard work of other youth academies, then, especially if you support organic development, Arsenal might be the team for you. They're a young team. They have a long way to go, but they've showed that with a young team, they can still bring out results. If that interests you, then you should pick Arsenal over the other teams.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. If you want to plug anything, now's the time. I know you got you're great on Twitter, especially for any Kings fans listening. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at the Sanjesh Singh. Also, just a shameless plug, make sure you wear a mask if you go outside. Doesn't hurt to say that. And stay safe.
Thanks so much, man. And we will talk to everybody next week.
Thanks.
So that wraps up our international team search of the week. Three great interviews there, three great people. Thanks again for joining us, Ace, Matt, and Sanjesh. And just a little note here going forward, we want to continue doing these. If you have a team in Europe particularly that you want to come on here and tell your story about or recommend that people support, please get in contact with us. The easiest way to do that is to tweet at us at Rise Republic Pod. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast if you do not mind. A 5-star rating goes a long way, longer than you'd think. We really appreciate it, and looking forward to some more wins this week for the Republic. Thanks very much.